Okay, we good? Jacko?
Yeah, I'm good.
All right, 3, 2, 1. Welcome to the G&JB show. What are we, Jack? Season 3, episode number 3.
Yep, first guest.
Mate, the shotgun, Shannon O'Connell. Oh, how about that noise? Mate.
Just to.
We're spinning things around a little bit today. We've got the life stories of Shannon O'Connell. We're going to do more life stories as the weeks unfold. But this is an amazing. We wanted to start with this one. And look, all I can say is get the tissues ready. Okay. How are you, Shannon?
I'm good. I'm a bit nervous, but
I know you're a bit nervous. We've spoke about this many a times, talking about your life, but you rang me a few days ago, let's do it tomorrow. I'm like, shit, we can't do it tomorrow. But we finally got a day this week to get it done. And Jack, I'm sure you're excited to listen to this. Excited, is that the right word? Intrigued?
I'm intrigued, but I also want to know the journey and things that have happened and how you've turned that into a positive light, where a lot of people turn it in, you have your crossroads moments where you go one way or the other in life. And with our school programs, I know we're trying to get kids to go down a positive path. So none better than Shannon to, you know, guide them in the right direction if they're listening, and give them a bit of inspiration if they're going through some tough times.
So, are you ready, mate?
Yeah.
So, what we're going to do with our life stories, we're all going to go take it back to the start, where it started, where you were born, and then life growing up, and then people will really get to know a little bit more about Shannon O'Connell than they know about the number 78, but they don't really know why, do they?
No.
All right. Where did it all start, matey?
Well, many moons ago, 1983.
Yeah.
So I was born in Adelaide, grew up in Adelaide, lived there right up until I was 21 actually. I guess, you know, everything was all good and my mum and dad were reasonably normal, happy. My dad was a speedway rider. He rode solo bikes. And he died when I was 2. He actually died 5 days after my birthday and 5 days before his 26th birthday. Which is why I hate my birthday.
Was he racing?
Yeah, he died on the track. So I guess my mum was there as well. So she watched her husband die. It just went from there. Like she, my mum was dealing. I actually only found out maybe 5-6 years ago that they had broken up for a little bit. Like I guess probably an argument that most couples have, where they were split for a couple of weeks or something, and my mum actually slept with another rider. I only found this out recently as well, and that rider pulled out of the race that my dad died in, and the guy that filled into that race is the one who was inexperienced and probably shouldn't have been on the track at the time, and he was the one that caused the accident. So I guess my mum lived with a lot of guilt from that. I mean, I personally think when you're married and you break up for a week, you're cheating. But I guess a lot of people would say she didn't cheat, but to me she did. And she had to live with that. And I guess her way of dealing with that was turning to anything she could. I think she started with alcohol, ended up becoming a heroin addict. I don't even know how long it took. But I guess in a way, she had a bad life even before she met my dad. Like my mum was gang raped when she was 15, and she met her first husband, I think, when she was 17, which is my brother's dad. She wasn't ever accepted into his family. He used to bash her, and he was a pig. And then I guess she met my dad, who was a knight in shining armor. My dad was the type of person that I remember my grandparents telling me that he the lady at Woolies accidentally didn't scan his bread, so he drove back and paid for it. He was that kind of a good guy.
Yeah.
So I guess my mum met him, and then not too much long after that he was taken away from her.
So how long had mum and dad been together until he passed?
Well, I'm only 18 months younger than my brother, so not long.
Yeah, true.
And I was 2, so maybe 2.5 years or 3 years.
And the number he wore was 78. That's why it's so much in your life at the moment.
Yeah, so my dad's number was 78. My nan actually only told me a couple of weeks ago that the reason he was 78 is because when he was coming up in the juniors, he was the 78th person.
Goosebumps already.
Because I when I did the 78 stairs a few weeks ago, I was like, why 78? Like, why couldn't he have had like 18? And then, And then my nan said to me that he was the 78th number on their records as a junior. So that's, he took that number on to when he was an adult. So and that number has never been used again, because when a rider dies, their number stays, their number.
It's like retired, yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. So... was he a full-time speedway rider? Was that his job, or did he have other job as well?
He was a Sparky. He had his own electrician company, which I believe was successful. But yeah, it was. I think speedway was just his passion.
So, is there footage that you've seen of Dad? Like, I know there wouldn't have been a lot of video stuff back then, but is there things that you back to every now and again?
Oh, I don't go back to him. I've got videos of him racing. I've actually got videos of the accident because it was played on the news every year on his memorial, on Channel 9 News, I think, used to play it. So I've got videos of that. Actually, I think Channel 9 did a story on me a few years ago and they put it in the video as well. That was nice.
Hard to watch.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go ask about a bit more in depth about the accident. Was there a lot, was it a big drama, or was it just Dad straight into the fence? Was it a lot of people involved, a lot of injuries?
No, there was only like, I don't know how it happened really. I do believe someone's chain came off and he didn't get out the way, in the right direction. And my dad's clipped him, and went into the concrete. Well, he was dead on the track, but I think they brought him back a couple of times, but no, he was gone.
Yeah. So how old was Dad at the time?
25. It was 5 days before his 26th birthday.
That's my age. I'm 25 this year. Wow. Yeah. Well, that's crazy.
When I remember when I was 25 in 5 days, I was like, today. I imagine dying today.
Wow.
And I think Cooper at that point would have been maybe one or two as well.
Oh, similar, all similar ages.
Yeah.
Mm. Unbelievable. Mate, you've just spoke about briefly You mentioned mum and heroin. Can we go back? Was it the death of your father that you think started that, or was that a previous thing? And how did the drugs come into you, and what it developed over those years, I suppose?
My mum, as far as I believe, never even smoked a cigarette before my dad died. So I guess it was just her way of dealing with the grief. Anything that was going to cover the grief was what she was going to cling to, and it ended up being heroin. And I guess the addiction of it it was too much, and it took over her life. I mean, she did things to all of us that I'm sure a person with the right mind frame wouldn't have done. She brought people into our lives. We were in Adelaide a couple of weeks ago, and there was this lady that was clearly off her face asking for money and cigarettes in a car park. And my kids were freaked out by it. But I remember my mum used to send me and my brother out and say, don't come home without smokes. And we would have been like 5, 6 years old, and finding cigarette butts in the gutters and coming home to my mum with half smoked cigarettes. And
thinking you'd done something good for your mum, I suppose.
Well, we weren't allowed to come home without it.
Wow. I think, you know, like when I do see, like similar to probably Cooper and Taylor, it's for me, that'd be confronting, like seeing someone like that. When I run in the city or something and someone's off their face, it's different to what I'm used to. But if you've grown up in that environment, that'd be something it's just normal to you. And
yeah,
I'd be the same as your kids.
I think that's something that I'm sort of struggling now to deal with, is the fact that I thought my life was life. Like, I didn't realize until now that I'm seeing a different side of life, that's not life. Yeah. Like, what I went through was traumatic and confronting, and it's not how life's supposed to be.
Because you're a kid, you don't know any better, do you?
No.
You just think that's normal.
Yeah.
And it's not till you grow up and you've had your own kids and you've shown them a better life, and I'm sure they appreciate it. And
yeah.
Yeah.
Sure. Well, I hope so.
They better. Bloody better if they're listening.
they better know about it. Mate, so, mate, you had a few. So I'm guessing mum got heavy into the heroin and the smokes and drinking. I'm guessing, was it anything goes at the time or when you were young?
Yeah, so, I mean, she always, I guess she loved her kids. She loved us more than anything, but her addiction took over and, you know, people came into our life, people that didn't, I guess she probably didn't have much say because she was not in the front, like a mindset to choose who was in her life. But I mean, I remember probably my earliest memory, we were in a house and people were coming, looking for someone else, like trying to, someone owed them money or something that they were linked to my mom. And my mom's gone outside with a pocket knife. Like my mom was like 40 kilos. She's gone outside to see these people robbing us with a pocket knife and she got stabbed. I would have been 5 because my brother, who was 5 years older than me, was 10 and he had to pull the knife out of her stomach. She nearly died. I do remember as well, their grandfather came and picked them up, but he wouldn't take me because I wasn't their family. And so I was stuck there and with our neighbours until my grandparents would come and get me. And I think not long after that, we moved houses after that. We lived in a house, it was 2-story and a guy that was in our life a lot through a linked family, a family member, he knocked on our door and told me to go upstairs and stay upstairs. Him and his sister bashed my mum looking for drugs and it was like prescription drugs they were looking for. They bashed her and trashed her house looking for drugs and I was upstairs hiding in a cupboard. And I actually remember being so scared and my mum later blamed me because, you know, these people, the way they were, I guess bikies back then were a bit different to what they are now. And they didn't do things in front of, children and elderly. So that when they sent me upstairs, my mum said to me, if you didn't go upstairs, they wouldn't have done it. And I would have been maybe 6 or 7 then.
So carrying that guilt as well, or your.
Yeah. Oh, I was petrified. All I could hear was my mum screaming.
These things are clear in your mind still?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just remember literally hiding in a cupboard. Being blamed after that. Like, I think it would have taken me a long time even to come out of the cupboard thinking, are they gone yet? But being blamed after that was just like, well.
So you can remember hearing like your mum screaming and shouting and the attack going on.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. Mate, and then I know this is tough for you. We've agreed to get it out in the open. I get it, but I know this is a tough time, mate. So that's about 6-7 years old.
Yeah.
And I know there were other things, whether you want to go there or not, that happened through that life.
Same guy that did that. Obviously my mum really had no say in letting them back into the house after what they did. That same guy was at our house and sexually abused me when I was a bit older. And I never told anyone because my brothers we were raised to be very protective, and my brothers were so protective of me that I knew that if they found out what had happened, that they would try and protect me and they'd get themselves hurt. So I never told anyone because I didn't want my brothers to get hurt.
My God.
My brothers, I still haven't told them who it was. I think they sort of know now, but I mean, it's 30 years odd.
Yeah. Wow. So when people see the hard ass Shannon O'Connell, maybe people might understand that there's reasons behind how protective you are of your feelings, your thoughts and your kids, I suppose, at the moment.
Yeah. I guess that's one thing that people just don't understand, like the reasons behind why I am so full on with what I do and even with my training and things like that, why I push myself so hard. It's almost like it's a punishment. Mm-hmm. And it's I push myself until my way of dealing with things was training until all I wanted to do was sleep. And that was how I got through things. So that's sort of all I know now. And I pushed myself. And I guess it was actually only said to me, explained in a way the other day, that it's an addiction. Me pushing myself is an addiction, and your brain will do what it has to do to get that addiction, whether it kills your body or not.
I was about to touch on that. Do you feel like the way your mum went with her coping mechanism through addiction was obviously drug use, but yours is a positive, like it's training yourself and putting your energy into something more positive and helping you progress in your life?
Yeah, 100%. Like I've definitely, and probably one of the hardest things for me to deal with now is the fact that I'm so my mum. You know, everything I hated my mum for, I see in myself, but obviously in different ways. Like I'm not a drug addict. But I'm my mum. And she's not here for me to tell her that I understand and that I get it. So that's probably one of the hardest things that I've had to deal with. So hard that it made me try and take my own life at one point, because it's hard to explain depression, but when you're that depressed and nothing people say makes sense to you, and you can say to, yep, I get it, but you've made up your mind and nothing anyone can say changes that. And in my mind, I was my mum, and I thought that my kids were better off without me, because if I didn't become my mum, then they would have a better life. And at the time, I thought that that was the only way. But I mean, literally the next day, a few days later, when I spoke to my brother and he said to me, "How do you think Cooper's going to grow up knowing that his mum took her life?" Like that's just starting the whole cycle again. And now, obviously, with a clear mind, I see that. And it was obviously a big mistake. But at the time, that's the only way that you sort of know to deal with things.
I remember that time pretty clearly, and I remember in the lead up to it, we were talking two or three times, and now I'm ringing you going, "You're right, mate," just ringing her because I could tell she was dipping, and then the phone didn't answer for a day or so, and I thought, right, what the fuck's going on here? And she called me when you were come to, I suppose, didn't you?
I was in an induced coma for, I think, 3 days.
Yeah.
And,
a couple of days. Tough time, mate.
Yeah. But, I mean,
that's you.
Yeah. And people don't understand. People don't get it. I don't tell everyone. I'm not about a sob story. But I guess it's good if people are listening to see that, you know, there's a reason behind this hard-ass bitch. It's not a choice.
Yeah.
Like, life made me this way. I don't think it's a great thing, but I mean, I've always said, if I could help try and save one person's life by sharing what I've been through, then everything I went through was worth it, because I am here today to tell the story.
Mate, there's also another brief story you've touched on me previously in the past. And look, I'll cut it if you don't want this mentioned, I'll just take it out. But if you want me to just roll it, then I'll keep going with it, because it's not live at the moment. To me, this is one of the most frightening, scariest things, because it's totally not my world. I'm sure you told me that you had to inject your mum with heroin at one stage. Am I right? Or
It wasn't heroin, it was pethidine, which was prescribed, but it was obviously to help get her off. My mum was on like the methadone program and all that, and she got, I think there was a certain amount of pethidine injections that they gave her a month. And so when I was 10, one of the people who's related to this family that we couldn't really get away from died and was placed in our driveway. So he died of a heroin overdose, and he was parked in our driveway. My mum was obviously, they thought that my mum had killed this guy, which she didn't. They were out to get her. Like this family, there was, I think, 9 brothers, 2 sisters.
Same family that you're talking about.
Same family. I think half of them are dead now, thank God, but the other half are still around. He died in our driveway, and, you know, they wanted to kill my mum. So we had to move interstate. My mum changed her name and we lived in a country town in Victoria called Moi.
I went to Moi High School. Oh, there you go. My dad will be listening. He'll love that.
Yeah, right.
He knows people from
there. We were probably the biggest controversy that ever hit Moi.
Well, what is that?
Just well, my mum, like the reason we were there and my mum changed her name and I mean, she was clean for a little bit, but obviously went back to, my mum was just this person that could walk down the street and people would walk up to her and ask how to get drugs. Like she just had that about her. People just knew. I guess I didn't see it because she was my mum, but I mean, I'd probably see it now. If I seen some random down the street, I'd be like, drug addict. I know, she'll be able to get some. But
this guy?
Oh. Don't look too bad. Actually, I do get asked a lot.
When you make him wait.
Yeah, yeah, when I make him wait. Fuck
yeah.
Hell.
But yeah, so we lived in Victoria for, I think we were about there for about 18 months. And that's when I had to help her inject because it was just me and her there. My oldest brother had a daughter at that age. So he stayed in Adelaide to look after her. And my Simon, my brother, older than me, he sort of came and went. But yeah, so I had to help my mum inject. Like needles.
So when you had to do that, I can't get my head around this. This is my daughter's age right now. Mm. It's like, fuck it. Had you actually seen it happening before? Like had mum done it?
Seen my mum inject. My mum and her ex-husband who got her into heroin.
Yeah.
We used to go for drives and he had two younger daughters who are both grown up now. And I used to have to take him into the playground and I knew what was obviously I was there, you know, go look after the girls, go play with them. But I knew what was going on. I knew what happened, but I didn't know what I was doing when she put that there and push it. Like I didn't know what I was doing. I just, if I didn't do it, I was in trouble.
Did you ever speak to your mum about what happened with the guy?
No.
Never?
Never. It wasn't until after she died that I think anyone knew.
Mm.
It was two incidents. One was him and one was another person that was in our life at the time.
Always close to the family? Well.
Yeah.
To the circle, I suppose, whatever.
Yeah, more so my brother's friends.
Yeah.
Outside of boxing and obviously using that as your way to get through things, is there any other coping mechanisms you've had as you've grown older and like maybe seeking help with your depression or anything else?
No, I've always been that person that's sort of like old school, hard ass, talk about shit.
Yeah.
I'm trying now.
Yep.
I actually saw someone for the first time yesterday and she's sort of wanting me to try this procedure where it helps me cope and push them to a different part of my brain. I don't know if it's going to work because I'm sort of whatever about that kind of thing.
Try and be open-minded.
But I'm going to do it. Yeah. But yeah, like, I mean, I've been hypnotized and things like that. It didn't do anything for me.
Yeah.
I actually got hypnotized for my second fight to try and control my nerves.
Did you?
Heard about people
I've
doing
never
that?
Been so nervous in my life. But I'm the type of person that if you say, if you do that, that's not going to happen. It'll happen. And like mentally, I'll make it happen.
Yeah.
So they told me I wasn't going to be nervous and I was more nervous.
Yeah. I think you've got to believe in those sort of things, really, like have faith in it. And, you know,
heard about people. Wasn't Stevie Collins you told me about being hypnotized once against Eubank?
Steve Collins. Yeah, and people, it really worked. It worked. It's a massive fight, an early 80s fight, I think it was. Against, and he had Chris Eubank. I listened to a podcast the other day. Chris Eubank was talking about, he thought Stevie Collins was off his head, like he's some sort of alien or something by having this hypnotist.
Well, and Shannon, there you go. You know, next fight.
Yeah, no.
Don't
need it?
Not copping it.
Nerves are good.
Well, I suppose as you go along, you learn to deal with your nerves, don't you?
I don't know.
No? Well, deal with them somehow. You're still here.
So I actually... Chris McCullum was walking past my change room before my last fight, 78th fight.
Yeah.
And I was literally turned around. I'm like, Chris, whose idea was this? And he was like, you were saying that to me 10 years ago.
Yeah. I remember the fight when you fought Corey Farr. Obviously, we were in the same dressing room and, you were you just had this stony faced look. You were like in your own head talking to yourself, and to me, then you looked really nervous in that fight for some reason.
Yeah, that fight was different for me because it was Corey. It was someone that I knew so well, someone that I thought was a friend. And we'd sparred so much, so I knew how dangerous she was. And that fight was different for me than any other fight. They were different nerves. Like normally once my music turns on and I hear it, I walk into the ring, and I'm like, sweet, let's do this. For that fight, I was literally standing in the ring going like, what the hell's going on? Where's my headgear?
I remember speaking to you like, oh, I don't know, a few days, and obviously we speak often before, and you just saying, and you had this, occasionally you'd have these waves of doubt come over you. What if she beats me? What if this? What if that? What if that? And I'm going, what are you talking about, mate? You know exactly what
to do. What if
I
forget what to throw, like how to, like who throws the first punch? What if I forget what to do? Mm. I know boxing better than I know me.
Yeah, it was weird. I'm thinking, fuck it, what the fuck?
I do that whenever.
What's she going on about?
Yeah. Do you find you overthink a lot before you fight?
Yeah,
I'm the same. Do you think of, I know everyone says about like visualizing positive things. I visualize real negative shit.
Same.
Yeah, I visualize like if I get knocked out, how am I going to get back up? And what if he clips me with this? That whole last fight. But it makes me better.
Yeah.
Yeah, are you a bit the same?
Yeah. Mm. I'm not sure if it makes me better, but it happens. And I'm like, no, stop it. Stop.
That's not real.
It's not happening.
But mate, I think those doubt things come into a lot of people's minds, to be honest.
Yeah. Boxing people talk shit. Like they think it's everything's positive and I'm going to not. Yeah. Nah, you have doubts. You have thoughts. Yeah, 100%.
It's really called scared.
If you're not facing things that you're scared of in your life every day, what's the point in living?
Yeah, mate, it's going to be a boring life, isn't it? Like I see so many parents wrap their kids up in cotton wool, won't even let them play any sports because, oh, what if they get a scratch? Or what? Mate, what if they cross the road and get bowled over? That's going to be worse.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, yeah. Mate, tell us how you've had some negatives. Obviously, we've just spoken about it. Now, let's go back. Let's tell us the next stage of your life. So you've got up to roughly 12 years old. What was high school years? You've gone to high school when you were in Melbourne?
I was like 11 and I started high school, I think I did year six and graduated, and because in Victoria they've always done what we're doing now.
Yeah.
Year seven
yeah.
was high school. So I started high school and then I came back to Adelaide and was in year eight again at my first year of high school.
Yeah.
I did all the same stupid 13, 14 year old things that everyone's doing. I thought, you know, like I was pretty bad at school.
As far as academically,
I was average academic. I was the naughty kid.
Yeah.
I'd get into fights. I'd swear at teachers. I'd do all that naughty stuff that I just, you know, I never really had anyone to tell me what was wrong and right.
Mm.
Other than my grandparents who were always there from the start.
Is that mum's grandparent? Mum's or dad's parents?
My dad's parents.
You were tight with them, hey?
Yeah, very. Like even like when we lived in Victoria, my pop used to catch a train from Melbourne from Adelaide to Melbourne and then another one to Moe. My mum wouldn't even let him inside.
He'd just come and see you kids.
He'd come and pick me up so I could come back and see my nan and then come back to drop me off. And like, so he did four trips for school holidays and things like that. I remember I would have been in year eight, year nine. Things were got so bad at home. And I used to catch three buses to school just so I didn't have to move schools because I've moved schools so many times. And I remember my mum was so scared of being alone that she didn't want me to go to school. So I used to have to run away from home to go to school. And I used to have to make a dash to the door, get through the door and fly down those stairs because my mum would be chasing me and I'd be running to the bus stop just so that I could go to school.
Shit, I had a different experience.
Yeah. And
running the other way.
Yeah. And I remember like we lived in at the time there was a caravan, it was in West Beach and there was a caravan park down the road and I used to run down there at times and my grandparents had like a reverse charges number that I could ring them on and I used to ring them in
those days.
my pop would come and pick me up. My grandparents lived at like an hour's drive from West Beach. And he used to come and pick me up, and I'd be hiding from my mum in this caravan park. I mean, people probably thought I was just some grub trying to break into their caravans. And so I went back and forth to between my mum and my grandparents for 3 or 4 years, because like my grandparents were obviously very normal and strict, and I wasn't, like, I'd get in trouble at school, and when they'd put their foot down, I'd go back to my mum's because I could do anything there. And when things would get too hard and I wanted a normal life, I'd go back to my grandparents. So I did that. And then I ended up.
Did you go to grade 12? Did you go to grade 12?
No, I finished year 11 and got a job.
Yeah.
Back then they used to say, if you didn't want to go to uni, there was no point. So I was like, well, I don't, like, what's no what, point, what even is uni? No,
yeah.
Like,
can't even spell it.
Yeah. I guess it's like high school. Schooling wasn't as important back then as what it is now. Guys, don't drop out of school. Don't do what I did. but yeah, so I got a job and I lived with my grandparents then for most of my late teenage, early adult years, until I started partying and getting into party drugs myself. And it was someone saying, it was actually the mother of this family saying, she's going to turn out just like her mum, that I put my foot down and I've not touched drugs since.
So you remember that? That's a turning point in your life.
Yeah, I started boxing, and
Pretty much straight away. How did you get it? Did you just pick the phone up? I need to box, or someone? So led you
I started training with Terry Fox, who was a speedway rider as well.
Yeah. I didn't know that.
So he was a sidecar rider. And my dad, he knew my dad. My grandparents were always very involved in the speedway, even after he died. And they took me down to his gym. That was it.
What year was that?
2003.
Okay, so I met you in 2004 at Adelaide Nationals.
Yeah.
So you'd been, you had about four fights, I think, and you were three fights at Nationals?
Four or five fights I'd had there, yeah. And then, I went to, so I won Nationals then. I went to Oceania's and met Chris, and he started talking angles and stuff to me. I was like, what are you talking about? So I learned more from Chris in like a 9-day training camp than what I learned in Adelaide.
Yeah.
Terry was just he's just a tough man. Like, he instilled being
You know what? He was probably what you needed at that time in your life, though. Like, because do it this way.
I remember he actually created Sunday training sessions, compulsory training sessions, just so I wouldn't go out on Saturday nights. I still used to go out, but then I'd be like, I'm midnight, I'm going home. And that's why I moved to Queensland, because I met Chris. I learned so much more from him in just a training camp at the AIS. And just knew that I couldn't keep doing it in Adelaide with all my friends that were going out and
so you were boxing and partying. And then after that Nationals, is that when you pulled it up?
Yeah, I literally moved. I think I moved up here. I came up here for a fight.
You did, yeah.
And then I moved up here like 2 or 3 weeks later, because
Who did you fight when you came up? Do you remember?
Jasmine.
Jasmine Ward.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, her mum attacked me when I got out the ring.
What a world.
That was in Bundy.
Really?
Yeah. That was in Bundy.
That's right, yeah. Wow. That is a few years ago.
Yeah.
Mate, so whether you're in the dressing rooms or part of your training camp, do you have, I don't know if it's a flashback, or do things spur you on from previous parts of your life, from tough times or anything, or you just know what you know now and you just keep going?
I know what I know now. My last fight was my 78th fight. So, I did sort of go like, let's do this, Dad. Like,
and just quietly, that was when she was supposed to retire after 78 fights, but no.
Yeah. No. I spoke to Steve. I'm like, I think in 13 years' time, Steve will be 78 years old. So maybe I'll do it then.
Oh, shit.
Like, well, there's going to be something. And that'll be,
next one, when I'm 78, full
pin. Maybe when Cooper's had 78 fights, he's on 30 something now.
Oh, mate.
I actually put it in my post in the change room. I was like, yep, let's do this, Dad. And then I sort of like looked over to the side. I'm like, come on, Mum, give me some of that. How's the language on this?
Go for it.
Get it done, mate.
Come on, Mum, give me some of that cunt that you've got.
And okay, you're not allowed to say that one. Yeah, right.
Yeah, that's probably the first time I've spoken to them. But in my head, I'm like, yes, I get nervous, and yes, it's not. I don't know. Boxing is not about winning and losing to me. It's about getting to that next. I have to keep going. It's more about the fight rather than winning and losing. Fighting's what I know. I've done it all my whole life, and that's how I keep going. I guess boxing is a way of putting that as a positive.
Yeah. Well, I remember when your first professional fight, we were promoting it, remember? Yeah. And it was like, it was an opportunity. Hey, Chris, you reckon Shannon wants to turn pro? I don't know, I'll ask. Yep, okay, she's on. A couple of weeks later, she's fighting at the Gambaros, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And we had some good you know who else we had on that show? Holy shit. Some of these guys have retired now from boxing and you're still going. So your first pro fight, we had Reagan Dussault as an amateur. We had Leah Wilson as an amateur. We had Nathaniel May as an amateur. Yeah, it was like you imagine all those people on the same card now, you just couldn't afford it.
Yeah.
But it's like everybody, people see, and a lot of the public see people with records of like 4-0. Oh, she's only had 4 fights. There's been 10 to 15 years before those 4 professional fights, or you know what I mean? Like you've had 2 fights. Oh, he's a novice. Yeah. But it started at 13. I've also had 85, 90 amateur fights as well.
Yeah, tired with both.
You've got to live. You guys know yourself as an amateur, especially getting up. You've actually got to live like a professional. Otherwise, you're not just going to turn pro and be really professional about your attitude one day. You've got to live it all through as a child.
I didn't start eating breakfast until I turned pro.
There you go.
That was my. Chris said, "Well, you know, you've got to start eating better." I went, oh, "Okay, I'll have breakfast."
It's a start. It's a starter.
I didn't eat vegetables until I started boxing.
Holy shit. Well, you wouldn't have known anybody.
No one cooked them for me.
Yeah, yeah. frozen pizza.
My nan and pop were, I don't know if it's a Pommy thing, but Pommies don't eat veggies. Is that a thing? My pop hated
potatoes.
Vegetables. Yeah, everyone eats potatoes. Potatoes and vegetables. It's a treat.
That's a treat.
It's a carb, that's why.
Yeah.
Chips.
Your kids eat? Do they eat good? Because you force it down their throat.
Yeah, Cooper's not so much anymore because he's nearly 15, so if he doesn't want to eat them, he won't.
Thinks he knows it.
Yeah. I can't really force food down his throat. But no, Felix eats great.
Because he doesn't know anything else.
I saw Felix eating a cheeseburger with fries on it the other day.
Yeah.
On your Instagram.
Yeah, he's smart, that kid.
Yeah, he had his
hand. I don't know where he got it from. Like, he watched someone do that.
Meat, potatoes, good diet.
Bread.
Yeah, perfect, mate.
There's a bit of pickle on there.
Veggies.
I bet that would be on
actually, he pulled the pickle off.
Pickle would be on the mirror somewhere, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Mate, so where else are we going with? So obviously we've got into your boxing, your amateur boxing. You travelled many countries, didn't you? You represent Australia quite a few times.
Yeah, I where have I been? My first trip was Tonga. That was an experience.
That was Oceania Games.
Yeah.
Were you in? I love this. It's only a short story, but I love this one. Were you at the World Championships where Sabrina didn't have her mouth guard?
I don't know.
And an Indian girl walking from ring A. Yes. So
I was.
Or it was a color or something. Or something was not right with Sabrina's mouth guard.
Yeah, I think it might have been orange or something. Or
something.
Or...
Anyway, what the story is, Chris was telling me, Sabrina's, oh, shit, you've got 3 minutes to get yourself a new mouth guard. Apparently this Indian girl out of ring one or the other ring was walking past. She just took it out of her mouth, threw it. Sabrina caught it, bam, whacked it straight in her mouth and fought the whole fight with the Indian girl's mouth guard.
If Chris was there, it wasn't World Championships, but it was a tournament overseas.
I'm pretty sure it was Chris.
Wouldn't take it from the Indian girl now, you'd get COVID.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, cooked.
Oh, mate.
High case numbers.
Yeah, I do remember that. But, yeah, no. Unless Chris obviously just knows the story. But
I think
I won World Championships that I went to. Sabrina was there and I'm pretty sure it might have been
that one. Wow.
That was also the World Championships where the big fight with Katie Taylor and Queen Underwood.
Oh, yeah.
Stole the show. That was huge.
And back then, this is what
Katie Taylor remembers. Got dropped like 3 times or something.
Did she?
Or twice. And, yeah, it was massive. It was such a good fight, though. She came back and won. But yeah.
And back then, well.
And Queen Underwood was like, yeah.
The scoring was a bit.
Is she an American girl?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I've seen.
Like you sort of.
Like a mini doco.
Rough story. Yeah.
Mm.
That's actually a pretty good fight this weekend.
Natasha Jonas. Yep.
I still think, look, I think Katie Taylor's that next level above, but I like Natasha Jonas. I think she's.
How does Jonas win, Shannon? What's she got to do? She doesn't.
Yeah, it's going to be tough, isn't it? But she's done good. You know, she's come back.
Like, it'd be cool to see her win.
Yeah.
But I don't.
She's come back after a knockout loss as well and had a couple of wins since then as well. Mate, seeing as we're all negative at the moment, well, we're getting positive, but, mate, I want to tell people what. The real life. When you got knocked out at Fortitude at your own gym, what was that like? Was shit going on in your head before the fight? Was it a whole, or it just happened and it was unlucky?
It just happened. She came out swinging. She was something that I didn't expect. We'd watched fights of hers and she didn't look anything to what she looked like that night. But she literally came out.
She was a tank.
She came out like throwing these haymakers. I remember leaning back and one of her punches went like that because it just came that way.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think it might have been the next one that caught me. But that's boxing. Mm. Who cares? I've had her retard manager from America has been on social media lately. He's Ebony Bridges' manager as well. I got knocked out. That's boxing. Who gives a shit?
Yeah.
Is that not what we do?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, people get caught. That's life.
What I want to know about, look, that happens. Most people have been on their ass or out or whatever. Like, if they've boxed for long enough, you know what I mean? Most people. What I want to go into is, how was your mindset after it? Did you go back into your depression? Did you slip downhill? Or do you think you dealt with it better than you might have thought?
The next day I was at Springwood Stairs.
Not looking at jumping off the top, I hope.
Rolling down.
Yeah.
It was actually not long after that, I think, that
I've never even put the two together. Yeah.
I think it was maybe about 2 months after that.
So it was that fight.
I don't think it was that fight. I think it was just
shit.
Yeah, I was not in a good space mentally. I've always thought, you know, people, because my pop died not long before that fight as well, and he was like my rock. He actually died a week before I fought in Argentina, which I think that's something that Steve always says to me, like, he's surprised that I got in there and fought my heart out. I did that because at the time I couldn't be there for my nan, so I was going to make it worthwhile. I wasn't going to get in the ring and sit down and not, like, I'll die fighting.
Have those thoughts ever come in your mind during the fight?
Yeah.
Family things come into your mind at what, when you're going back from the round, like, they pop in your head?
Yeah. Like fights where it's been hard and you know, like in Canada when I got dropped and it was a war of fight, I was split. In my head, all I was thinking is, this is nothing. This is just a fight. Like, at the time, like, there's split seconds in a fight where you think, I don't want to be here anymore, but then that same slip second you're throwing punches back. But boxing isn't about that for me. It's more about fighting than what the actual
the outcome.
Yeah.
And
that's why I don't care. Like, people, you know, people want to look at all these undefeated records and they go, oh, who does she think she is? She's had six losses. I couldn't give a shit. I got in with six people better than the other person did. Like, you know, it's not about winning and losing for me. It's life. Mate, and you don't win every fight in life.
People say, oh, that's 100% right. People say, well, you hear people say, oh, Shannon wouldn't fight so-and-so. And I say every time, I say, you're full of shit, mate. Shannon is one person that will legitimately fight anybody.
Yeah. I've gotten to a point in my career, I guess, that, like, Luke sat me down at the beginning of last year and said, look, I'm happy for you to keep going, but we've got to stop getting hit. I feel like he should have said that to me 5 years ago because I was like, okay.
You wouldn't have listened.
Okay.
You wouldn't have listened 5 years ago.
And then all of a sudden I just created this head movement and I'm not getting hit. And I thought I was fluking it until my last fight. And I was like, well, this is a thing now. I moved my head.
Jeez, this coach knows what he's talking about.
I should have listened.
but, you know, and I also, I've always, I guess at the start of your career, you being a female as well, you've got to fight anyone. You've got to give away weight. You've got to give away experience. You've got to do that. But I'm at a point in my career now where I don't have to do that. I've actually got myself, and I bust my ass in training, and I've gotten myself on a path now where I want to win the a bantamweight world title. So I don't need to go and give away weight and fight a super featherweight like before. You know, I'm trying to do my career a bit smarter now. I've got myself into that position where I don't need to take stupid fights, but I'm still not in it for the easy fights.
You're definitely like early on. I think a lot of people forget how much you have to fucking give away, and you're not making money. You're trying to support yourself. You're working pretty much full time as well.
Yeah.
And then you've worked, you've done all that, and now you're in a position you're not going to let any of that go. No.
By fighting someone, I've never really thought of that until probably the last maybe 18 months, where actually, you know, I want to make something of it. I think Google says I'm a millionaire. I'm far from a millionaire. I live in Logan. I'm a single parent. I'm not a millionaire.
I've earned 1 million cents in my life.
Yeah.
That's about it. Mate, so talking about knocking on the door for world titles, we just saw Ebony Bridges and Chantel Courtney.
Shannon.
Yes.
Shannon.
Did you watch the fight?
I didn't. I didn't record it because I wasn't waking up that early in the morning. So not on a Sunday morning.
To watch two girls I can beat.
I did. Actually, it was the day before I did the 78 stairs, and then I was at the Tasman Fighters fights that night, and I was like, I'm not waking up at 5 a.m. And I set a reminder on my thing, but I didn't press record. So I caught the end of the fight, but I've obviously seen highlights, which I would assume are the best parts of the fight.
Yeah.
And it was a good, tough fight. Good on both girls for having a war, but I was at that level 5 years ago.
Mm. Yeah. What are they, 6, 7, 8 fights, something like that?
Like, I mean, they talk about Shannon Courtney, Rachel Bull, Ebony Bridges. I've had more fights than all three of their records put together.
Yeah. Mate, I think you deserve a shot, and you're trying to campaign and get that shot. Well, you're number one mandatory at the moment?
I think so, yeah. Well, I'm number one. I don't know if that makes you automatic mandatory. We're sort of trying to work around all that. Rachel Bull is getting first dibs on a shot because she was originally contracted. But I'm also told that she's not 100% yet either from her.
Through COVID, yeah. I think she struggled, didn't she?
Yeah. So I'm hoping, I'm more than happy to fight Shannon Courtney. If I win, I'm more than happy to defend it against Rachel Bull if she's not good in time.
Okay. How do you think, if it came up against Shannon Courtney, and how would the fight go?
I think experience-wise, it'll be the same as Shanika.
Yeah.
Would
you outbox her or would you stop her?
I think I'd probably I don't really think about stopping people. I'd outbox her if the opportunity came up. Mm. I'd jump on it.
What about next one? So you win that, your first challenge against Ebony Bridges. How does that go?
Who's Ebony Bridges?
Listen to it.
Like, really? Does she got a shot that she didn't deserve? Does she deserve another one?
Yeah, pretty cool.
I'm in saying that. If she wants to fight, if they want to make it happen, I'm more than happy to fight her. I'll fight her one-handed.
Yeah. I'd like to see that one-handed.
Don't do it. Don't do it, Jan.
Didn't say I couldn't use my head. Rachel Ball, have you seen her fight?
Yeah, I actually think out of the three girls, she's the best.
Me too.
Yeah. Is she a bit taller?
Yeah.
She's a red-handed girl. Yeah.
Seems like a nice girl too, actually. Oh, she's not into that pulling the fight up because of assets.
Well, she's from a good gym too. Mm. So
where's she from? Sorry.
Isn't she training Michael Conlon's gym?
Yeah, I'm not sure. Oh, I know she's a former Thai boxer or something as well. Like, she won a Thai boxing world title as well. So yeah, I saw her fight Shannon Courtney. She dropped her. Shannon Courtney did good to come back. That was a solid fight, but I think they're all similar levels, those girls.
Yeah, and I actually think Shannon Courtney is a lot better than what she fought against Ebony. Like, Ebony, good on Ebony for making her fall into a fight, but I think in a rematch, Shannon Courtney boxes better and beats her easier.
Yeah, I think the
the moment got to Shannon Courtney a little bit. I think
all the talk and all the hate, she wanted to get in there and fight and bash her, but
yeah,
she'd probably do better than it, I think, if they fought again.
And I think, yeah, as you touched on the experience factor, you've dealt with every kind of situation now, and you feel like you're in a position now where whatever happens, you'll adapt
last fight, I had to adapt. We didn't have a clue. I didn't train for what Shanika was coming out to do because I had no idea. I clicked the day of the weigh-in that who she was training with and how most of his fighters come out and fight, that she was going to be awkward. But I mean, we didn't train for that. Now I think, you know, I was able to adapt in that fight. So I'm going to do it with anyone.
Yeah, can't buy that. And then people even talk about me 2-0 and you get names thrown at you and it's, well, yes, I feel like I would beat them, but I can't buy that experience and that time. I've got to work my way to get there and
yeah,
you can't rush it. One thing
that I've said about pro boxing, skill isn't as important in the pros as the amateurs.
Yeah.
You need heart.
Yeah.
If you don't have heart, skill won't get you anywhere because in the pros, like, you've got to have fight in you. You've got to be able to dig deep and push through and fight at times. And I mean, I'm not saying you have to lose your skill to fight, but you're going to get hurt at some point. Everyone feels punches and gets hurt in the pros.
Yeah.
And you've got to be able to push through that and fight through that. You've got to, if you don't have heart, you're not going to get anywhere in the pros.
We had Todd Kidd on here and he said, amateurs, skill beats will. And he said, pros, will beat skill.
Yeah.
And I thought that stuck with me. So,
yeah, that's a good one. Like, look at how many people that are doing well in the pros that you think in an amateur fight you wouldn't have.
They wouldn't win a state title, half of them.
Well, look at Chris George. Honestly. How successful his professional career went. His amateur career was very standard. It was, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's so many. Mm. Yeah. Mate, what is, in a few words, what has your life growing up taught you, like your growing up life? What have you taken that to make you a better person?
Am I a better person? Though?
Well, I think so. Well, I don't think you're that person. A better person than you thought you'd go down that path, or other people thought you might go down that path? Do you take resilience from it when you're fighting as well?
Yeah, I guess resilience is something that I'm just really learning about now. And like the zoo training and all of that sort of stuff is helping me with that.
School bell. You hear that?
I heard that.
Being mentally resilient. I don't know.
You're just still living it at the moment.
I don't actually know. Like, there's a lot of things that I do that I don't understand myself at the moment as well. Like, you know, why can't I just be happy with what I've done? Why am I all still pushing for more? Like I did those 78 laps of Kangaroo Point stairs and I nearly ended up in hospital that night, but already I'm thinking about what I'm going to do next and how many I'm going to do and like where I'm going to go. And it's a psycho thing that it's not enough for me. So I don't know. I'm still trying to sort of work out.
Okay. Well, I'm going to go.
What I've got good from it. I don't know.
I'm going to go a harder question than if you can't work that out. Boxing's finished. What happens next?
Boxing's not finished and that's why.
No, when boxing finishes, let's pretend. What have you thought about the rest of your life? Can you see yourself in a happy place?
I've tried to. But that's why I'm still boxing, because I can't.
Haven't worked it out yet.
I don't know. I guess a lot of things that I've done, I've, you know, people know me as Shotgun now, and I think the real me hides behind her. I'm not ready to give up Shotgun yet, because I don't know who I am.
I know that.
So I'm quite happy staying Shotgun for a little while longer.
Okay, but I think there's got to come a time where you got to try and find something else that fills the void, fills that gap for boxing. Yeah. Would you agree with that?
Opening my own gym, I thought was going to do that, but it hasn't. I mean, I love having my gym, but and eventually that will be everything, I think. But at the moment, it's not enough. I can't train other fighters because I've still got so much more fight in me.
No,
I can train other fighters, but I can't be it.
Yeah. No, I can take a lot away from that too. I'm in that headspace and I've still got a lot more to give to the sport, but I feel like when COVID came, I was at home. I just didn't know who I was. And because you don't have time to think, you're just in that moment all the time. And you know, you got your shotgun name. Like, that's what you put your character to. That's when you feel like, that's when you feel like the shit. Yeah. You feel like center stage. That's what it's all about.
Yeah.
And you don't want to give that up. Not yet. Like, well, I fucking don't.
No.
No. It's the, and then you, and when you're in that mindset, it's so hard to think about the next chapter or what I'm going to do next, because if you're thinking about that, then you're not fully focused on what you're doing now.
Yeah. Well, I guess in a way, like how my dad was my mum's knight in shining artist, shotgun's mine.
Yeah, there you go.
That's the way. That's who makes my life better.
Yeah.
There's two of me.
What's yours, Gareth? The white axe?
No, it's not. My look.
Food.
When you're a
potato.
You fuck yeah. Mate, when I finished sport in general, because I had a few different sports, and I thought my life was to be an athlete all my life. And then I stopped and I started coaching and training and business. I get excited by business. So I filled that gap with something else. I really enjoy putting fight nights on. I really enjoy the schools program that we do. I fill that gap. But I think if you're an athlete, geez, you've got to find something else one day, because it's, well, you can understand why people go on too long.
Yeah.
You know, you can understand why people go on too long and get hurt, or in 10 years' time, you know what I mean? They're walking around in circles. They don't know their own name. We can all understand that, because it's a hard thing to give up. But, mate, I just, yeah. It's a hard thing to, while you're still in it at the moment, but I know it came to me while I was injured. I knew, look, I was a gymnast and a footballer who did boxing, and I boxed like a footballer, and that was it, right? And I just had a go, and that was it. I worked really hard, but I was never a boxer. I learned a lot after I'd finished boxing. That's how I learned about boxing. Once I'd finished, I think, oh, fuck, there's got to be an easier way than just doing 500 rounds on the bag every night. Like, Jesus Christ. But I remember training after I'd had my knee reconstruction about 4 weeks before the fight. I said to Chrissy, I said, I'm done after this. He goes, oh, well, let's give it a go and see how we go. But so I didn't say anything else, but I just knew it was time, because in that time, I'd started helping the kids in the gym. I actually found that filled my gap, you know what I mean, while I had forced time off. So
yeah, I'm not there yet.
Yeah, it'll come.
I love training people that want to learn, but other than that, no, it's not there yet. I've always sort of, people always ask me, obviously, because I'm 38, people's like, when are you done? I'm done.
40 years to go before you get to 78.
I'm done when my body tells me I'm done, because my brain won't.
Mm.
So when, once my body gives up, that's when I'm done. Obviously, as well, like Steve and Luke, I trust them. I mean, I've said so many times, like when you're getting in a professional boxing ring, you're trusting your corner with your life. I trust them with my life.
Yeah.
And I know that they'll tell me when they think I've had enough. I know that Steve will.
I think you will.
I think Luke will be too scared to tell me, but Steve will tell me.
I think they'll both yeah. say it. Yeah. But
Luke,
that's why
Luke
you
will
put
get
trust
Steve
in
to
them.
Tell me.
Yeah.
Yeah. And all they've right. watched you grow up now too, like in the last how many years you've been with them, and
yeah,
you know, they see you having kids and a future, and they'll 100%. Know when to pull it in. Like, that's why I trust you 100% too. You've seen me since I was a pup.
Right, as you said, you know, before you had hair on your balls.
That's it. I didn't want to say that in front of a female, but yeah, why not, Gary?
Yeah, you got on your chin.
Yeah. The balls on my chin.
All right, shotgun. I've never called you shotgun. I don't call you shotgun. Everyone else can. Shannon, mate, I've known the story, but we've gone in deep with it today. Thanks very much.
Thanks for having me.
You got a bit off your chest. Are you ready to let people know, or?
Yeah.
You'll let me know, yeah?
Yeah, I'm good.
Okay.
Thanks again, Shannon. Thank you. Good stuff.
Thank you very much. We'll see you next time. Make sure you tune in to G&JB Show on Spotify and Apple iTunes, I think.
Yeah, something like that.
See you next time.